Now, the idea of having to dig deeper is not a rationalization. In fact, in the chapter, the second chapter of the Talmud Chagiga, Chag meaning holidays, okay? The second chapter of the section of the Talmud Chagiga, the Talmud becomes intrigued with the creation of the universe, and especially with these 6 days of Genesis. And the Talmud tells us that from the opening sentence of the Bible, Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, through v'yuhulu ha-shamayim, thus the heavens and the earth were completed, the beginning of chapter 2. In other words, the 31 sentences, the 6 days, the Talmud tells us the entire text is given in parable form. A poem with a text and a subtext. Now again, put your mind into the mindset of 1,500 years ago, the time of the Talmud. Why would the Talmud think it was parable? What, you think they didn't, 1,500 years ago, the time of the Talmud, they thought that God couldn't make it all in 6 days? That it was a problem for them? Oh, we may have a problem today with cosmology and scientific data. But 1,500 years ago, what's the problem with 6 days? No problem. So when these sages pulled the 6 days out of the calendar and said that the entire text is parable, it wasn't because they were trying to apologize away what they'd seen in the local museum. There was no local museum. No one was out there digging up ancient fossils and saying, wow, I found ancient fossils. The fact is, the text tells you it's parable. If your close reading of the text makes it clear that there's information hidden and folded in below the superficial reading. And this is what, in fact, King Solomon wrote in Proverbs 25:11. A word well spoken is like apples of gold in dishes of silver. A word well spoken is like apples of gold in dishes of silver. And Maimonides said, what was Solomon talking about? What could King Solomon mean? Why should a word well spoken be like an apple of gold in dishes of silver? And he answers the question. He says, when you look at a dish from a distance, what you see is the dish. The beautiful silver dish. Valuable, eternally, or long-lasting. Only when you bring the dish close in, do you see what's in it, the apples of gold. The silver dish, Maimonides says, the silver dish is the literal reading of the text of the Torah. Beautiful. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob for 3,000 years have been a bestseller. The golden apples, the subtleties inside the text that expand the meaning way beyond the literal meaning. And Maimonides says, as gold is more valuable than silver, these golden apples blow the meaning apart, expand it way beyond the simple reading of the text. The idea of looking for a deeper meaning in Torah is no different than looking for a deeper meaning in science. It's not a rationalization. If you took the silver dish reading of the science, of the nature, of the world we see every day, and you get up early enough in the morning, you can look over in the east, and there comes the sun rising in the east. Wait a few hours, and the sun sets in the west. What's the silver dish reading? Oh, there goes the sun again. We're going around the earth. That's the silver dish reading of the universe. What's the golden apple? That it's the earth rotating on its axis. And if you neglect the rest of the universe and just take the sun-earth system, it's not the sun that's moving, although that's every perception of human perception, right? You look at you're not going to tell me the sun's not moving. I see it right across the sky, right? You're not going to tell me God didn't make the world in 6 days. I see it right in the text. That's the silver dish. But the golden apple is no. In the sun-earth system, it's the sun that is standing still and the earth that is moving, rotating on its axis, which means at this moment, as we sit here in Jerusalem, we're moving about 800 miles an hour. Oh, there go the clouds, look at them zooming by. No, that's not what's happening, right? Because we're all moving together. We don't feel it because it's inertial motion. There's no accelerations. So it feels like we're standing still. But the golden apple is we're moving at 800 miles an hour as we rotate around in 24 hours to get a day and a night out of that one day, 24-hour day. And that's the small part of the golden apples. Our Earth is moving around the sun. That's the rotation. But we're going around the sun at about 30 miles a second. We're going around the sun, and at about 250 miles a second, we are moving around the center of the galaxy. Do we feel any of it? No. So the silver dish reading would say, that's ridiculous, we're standing still. It got Galileo put under house arrest, right? Not any longer. We now know that there's a golden apple in the silver dish. And just as we look for the deeper readings of science, you have to look for the deeper readings in the text. And that's what King Solomon was saying, and that's what Maimonides expanded on it. Thousands of years ago, we learned that there are subtleties in the text that expand the meaning way beyond. And it's those subtleties I want to see. Among the early sources that tell us that the calendar is a two-part calendar, even predating Leviticus Rabbah, which goes back almost 1,500 years, which says it explicitly, Moses, in his closing speech, implies this to be the case. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 7, in the closing speech that Moses makes to the people, he says, in essence, if you want to see the fingerprint of God in the universe, and this is how he continues, consider the days of old, the years of the many generations. Deuteronomy 32, 7. If you want to see the fingerprint of God in the universe, consider the days of old, the years of the many generations. And the Kabbalah, Nachmanides, in the name of Kabbalah, says, why does Moses break the calendar into two parts? Consider the days of old, the years of the many generations. They consider the days of old, Nachmanides says, Sheshet Yemei Breshit, the 6 days of Genesis, the years of the many generations, all the time from Adam forward. You can see God's fingerprint in the universe one of two ways. Look at the phenomena of the 6 days and the development of a universe, which is mind-boggling. Or if that doesn't impress you, then just consider society from Adam forward. Okay, either way, you'll find the imprint of God. A bit over a year ago, I was sitting in the lobby of the Lerome Hotel here in Jerusalem and having a conversation with Professor Leon Lederman, physicist Leon Lederman, Nobel Prize winner Leon Lederman. And we were talking science, obviously. And as the conversation went on, I said, well, what about spirituality, Leon? He said to me, Schroeder, I'll talk science with you, but as far as spirituality, if you want to talk about spirituality, speak to the people across the street, the theologians. But then he continued, and he said, but I do find something spooky, and that was his word, I wrote it down afterwards, I do find something spooky about the people of Israel coming back to the land of Israel. Now, why did Leon Lederman find it spooky about the people of Israel coming back to the land of Israel? But that's Moses' statement. Consider the days of old, the 6 days of Genesis. That didn't impress Leon Lederman. But the years of the many generations following, from Adam forward, that impressed him. See, Leon Lederman found nothing spooky about the Alaskan Eskimos eating fish at the Arctic Circle. And he found nothing spooky about the Greeks eating moussaka in Athens. But he finds something real spooky about the Jews eating Peter falafel on Rehov Yafo, on Jaffa Street. Because it shouldn't have happened. It doesn't make sense historically that the Jews would come back to the land of Israel. And that's what happened. And that's what Moses is saying. Consider the land, the world. And that's why one of the functions of Am Yisrael, the people of Israel in the world, to act as a demonstration. We don't want everyone to be Jewish in the world. Just to understand that there's some monkey business going on with history that makes it not all just random, that there's some direction to the flow of history. And the world has seen it through us. It's not by chance that Israel's on the front page of the New York Times like 6 times a week. It's usually not very good news, but it's on there. You know, major countries aren't. Okay, but now, leaving from Adam forward apart, let's jump back to the 6 days of Genesis and try to see how we can find in the 6 days of Genesis that are separate from the world, the 15 billion years. First of all, we now know that when we write the biblical calendar that says 5,758 years, we have to add a bit to that, plus 6 days. So now when my youngest daughter, Hannah, years ago when she was just 7 years old, and my wife had brought me a dinosaur fossil from the northwest of the U.S. where she was doing some research for a book, brings a dinosaur fossil to the house, 150 million years old, dated by 2 radioactive decay chains. If you visit me in Jerusalem, I'm happy to show you the dinosaur fossil, the vertebra of a plesiosaurus. So Hannah says, Abba, dinosaurs? How can there be dinosaurs 150 million years ago when the Bible teacher tells me the world isn't even 6,000 years old? So what I said to Hannah was, if you look in Psalms, Psalm 90, verse 4, you find something quite amazing. In Psalm 90, verse 4, the psalmist, King David, says, 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that passes, like a watch in the night. Maybe time is different from the perspective of, let's say, Psalms, whoever, from the psalmist or from the creator or from the biblical perspective. Perhaps time is different. And that was a very good approach, I think, for a child that's 6 or 7 years old or 10 years old, or even approaching bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah age. And within Psalm 90, there is a core of a deeper truth. But we have to look for the deeper truth in Psalm 90 than just saying what the days of eras. Now, I have many colleagues who remain friends, but we disagree on this point, that say that the days were eras, okay? As Psalm 90 says. But we'll start with the problem with this, taking the days as eras, as you get older and you start doing Talmudic studies or start studying biblical commentary in depth, you find that problems arise out of taking the days as eras. And that would be, again, going back to the Talmud in Hagiga, as we talked about in chapter 2 of Hagiga. So chapter 2 of Hagiga, the Talmud, is trying to understand the subtleties, the golden apples in the silver dish of Torah. And it's going through and analyzing word by word. So it comes to the word Choshech. Choshech means darkness. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 4, the absence of light, where it says God separates light from darkness. But two sentences before that, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, when it says darkness, Choshech, was on the face of the deep, we're told by the Talmud it doesn't mean darkness. It means black fire, black energy, a kind of energy that is so powerful you can't even see it. Two sentences later, it means from there on, in verse 4, it means the absence of light. And there's other words. Maimonides brings down examples. Mayim. Most people, Mayim means what? Water. Mayim means water on day 3. But in the original statements of water, it may not mean H2O. The word Mayim, although it's spelled exactly the same, may also mean the building blocks of the universe. Interesting. Why? As Nachmanides points out, we don't have words for the subtlety. Of some of these settled concepts that are required to understand it. So the Talmud is going through and investigating the development of Genesis chapter 1. And it gets to the Genesis chapter 1, verse 5, which says, there is evening and morning, day 1. That's the first time that a day is quantified. There is evening and morning, day 1. And just before it gets to that, the Nachmanides brings down a discussion on the meaning of evening and morning. You know, does it mean sunset and sunrise? I mean, certainly would seem to. That's certainly the English implication. But there's a problem with that. And Nachmanides points it out, that the text says there was evening and morning, day 1. Evening and morning, a second day. Evening and morning, a third day. Comes to the fourth day, and the sun is mentioned. See, Nachmanides points out that for an adult reader, this should have made a problem. It's why we see parable. I mean, how do you have evening and morning for the first 3 days if the sun is only mentioned on day 4? That is a bit of a problem, don't you think? Yeah. Well, we know the author of the Bible, whether you take the logical approach that's divine, or even if you think the author was a bunch of Bedouins sitting on a campfire at night, which is pretty unlikely. One thing we know, the author was smart. She produced a bestseller for thousands of years. So you can't attribute to the fact of the sun appearing on day 4 to like amnesia or foolishness, right? There's a purpose for it on day 4. And the purpose is so that as time goes by and people understand more about the universe, you can dig deeper into the text. And then we're told, Nachmanides says, the text may say there is he Erev, but it doesn't say there is evening. Erev, he points out, Ayin Reish Beit, the Shoresh, the root of Erev, the Hebrew word Erev is chaos, mixture, disorder. That's why evening is called Erev, because when the sun goes down, vision becomes blurry. The royal meaning is there was disorder, and Boker is the absolute opposite. When the sun rises, be quiet, orderly, visit, able to be discerned. And the flow isn't from sunset to sunrise. That's why the sun is mentioned on day 4. It's a flow from disorder to order, from Erev to Boker, from chaos to cosmos, something that never happens in an unguided system. You may make the statement unequivocally, as I've done at universities literally around the world, order never arises from disorder spontaneously. There must be a guide to the system. That's an unequivocal statement. You have to have no caveats on that. Order cannot arise from disorder by random reactions. Oh, in probability it can, but the number is so small that physics says it cannot. So you go to the Yam HaMelech, the salt sea, the Dead Sea, and say, wait a minute, I see these orderly salt crystals. You're telling me God's there making each crystal? No. No, that's not what I'm saying. But the salt crystals do not arise randomly. They arise because these phenomenal laws of nature that are part of the creation package to force salt crystals to form, that the laws of nature guide the development of the world. It's why the word, there are only three creations in the whole 6 days.